Welcome back to Shattering Myths. As we transition from the Christian perspective that it's their Christ, their Jesus, that provides salvation by dying and then being bodily resurrected, Yahweh has an entirely different perspective, and let's consider it. Yahweh said, "And I will stand up and establish." I will stand up and establish with my covenant relationship, a means to recognize me as a source to understanding between you and me to help you respond, and between your offspring so that they might understand after you regarding and on behalf of their dwelling places and generations for an eternal and everlasting family-oriented covenant relationship to literally be and actually remain as your God and for your offspring after you. So rather than a person that Christians base their religion on, allegedly, that they don't know his name, they don't know his title, they don't know what he said, they don't know what he did, but they have him, even though they pay no attention to what he did, they pay no attention to what he said, they pay no attention to his name and pay no attention to his title, they still think that believing in him is the source of salvation. But Yahweh said, no, I'm going to do this. I'm taking a stand. I'm establishing a covenant. You know, that's what Yahusha is credited with doing, if you pay attention to what he did. And, you know, he enabled the promises of the covenant by becoming the Passover lamb, by his soul going to the place of separation to rid our souls of sin on matzah, to enable our adoption into God's family on firstborn children, and to pass along the enrichment and empowerment of being part of this relationship. He did all of those things, but you have to realize what Yahusha means. It's Yahweh saving us. That's what God is saying here, that he himself is the one that took the stand, the one that established the benefits of this covenant. That's why, that even if Christianity, I should say when Christianity, or if Christianity could get his name right, his title right, could actually pay attention to and understand the statements that he made in his instruction on the Mount, understand why and how he enabled the promises of Pesach, Matzah, Vekodim, and Shavuah, that even if they could do that, they would still have a problem by focusing on Yahusha. Because once you understand all of that, and you understand what Yahusha said, what he did, who he represents, then you look right past him, right through him, to Yahweh. That's where he wanted our eyes directed. That's who he wanted us to know. That's who he is. Diminished manifestation of Yahweh, representing the word of Yahweh, enabling the promises of Yahweh, doing the work of Yahweh, saving us. And of course, that statement in the Seventh-day Adventist Creed made no context, no prerequisite whatsoever of engaging in a relationship with Yahweh. It said nothing about getting to know Yahweh. I don't even know his name. Engaging in a relationship with him in accordance with his instructions, and then as a result of that, being saved. No, it goes directly to salvation. You don't need to know God. You don't need to understand what he's offering. Don't need to pay attention to any of his instructions. No, you go directly to salvation. You bypass relationship. But if God did that, if he allowed that, then there would be no release from all of the hell that religion and politics and militarism have perpetrated on this planet. Heaven would be the same experience we have here on earth. If God didn't set up standards, conditions for participating in his family and therefore entering heaven based upon walking away from religion and politics, then heaven would not be an improvement on earth. And if God were to say, I want to save people who do not know me, heaven would not be an improvement on earth. I mean, it is, the Christian position is absolutely absurd. It's moronic. And yet, it is promoted in absolute conflict with what Yahweh said, what Yahusha said, what Yahweh did, what Yahusha did. So God is saying here that he himself, and he says this throughout his Torah and prophets, Yahweh himself is the one who took the stand, who established the familial covenant relationship. This is the covenant, by the way, that Paul says was annulled, that Paul said was established with Hagar, that Paul says enslaves. And God says, no, this is me, myself, establishing this relationship. And this relationship is designed for you to understand who I am, what I'm offering you, how we can be together. It's for all people and all places for all time, he says. It's not until I decide to discard this one and create a different one. It's not one for this group of people and another one from another group of people. There's one. It's for all time. This myth of a Christian New Testament is therefore destroyed. Of replacement theology, destroyed. Of Christians in their church replacing those who choose to participate in the covenants. Destroyed. This notion that you can pay attention to the will of Yahweh and yet be religious is destroyed. This is God himself establishing his one and only covenant to help us know who he is, understand what he's offering, how we can engage in a relationship together for all people, in all places, for all time. It's a powerful statement. It is a clear statement. It is an affirming statement. It is what God says throughout his testimony. The Berith covenant is not just singular, and it's always singular. Affirming there's only one covenant. According to God, it is Olam, and the one and only covenant will endure forever. Olam means perpetual, continual, existing without ending. This means that there is only one covenant, and that it was not replaced by a Christian New Testament. There is no New Testament. According to Yahweh, his Berith covenant endures forever. According to Yahweh, he is the one who is offering the covenant. He is our Savior. At the heart of the covenant, we find Olam. And even with Olam, we find its roots speaking of child and family. Olal is child and Am is family. This is the eternal family for the children of God, Olam. It's also worth noting in both incidences, Berith was scribed in the construct form, which binds it to the words which follow it in the text. In the first instance, Berith covenant was associated with Ben, which is understanding. There, written in the first person, Ben conveys that the covenant is between and beside me, as in God, and my proximity, and within my defined space and time for the purpose of understanding who I am. And in keeping with the theme of family, children, and inheritance, on this occasion it was irrevocably linked to Zerah, which means offspring, descendants. This is the family. In the second instance, we find Berith yoked to Olam, meaning that it is forever associated with eternity. Wonderful thoughts, easily missed. While I cannot prove it, I suspect that the reason Bereth family-oriented covenant relationship is feminine, and it is feminine in the Hebrew text, is because of the work of our spiritual mother, the Ruach Kodesh. And it is a derivative of the Torah, which is also feminine. We are born into our Heavenly Father's family in accordance with Yah's Torah instructions by way of the set-apart spirit, making the covenant the product of these feminine aspects of Yahweh's nature. The covenant, as it is proclaimed in the Torah, through the workings of the set-apart spirit, provide new life. They nourish us, cleanse us, purify us, protect us, enlighten us. In accordance with the Torah's teaching, the set-apart spirit adorns us in a garment of light, which enables us to enter God's home because it makes us look perfect in His eyes. Working in harmony, the Torah and Ruach Kodesh save and empower us so that we might enjoy life eternal in our Heavenly Father's home. And as I've mentioned, by saying that He Himself is going to kum, stand up for, and establish the covenant relationship, God is announcing the central plank of the Mikre, the invitations to be called out and meet with Him, which not only predict the arrival of Yahweh in corporeal form, but also of His fulfillment of these days. God stood up for us on Pesach, Passover, and on yeasted bread. And because He will stand up for us again on reconciliations and shelters to camp out with God, we are restored and established, and we are able to walk with Him in this family relationship. Now, Yahweh is serious about His Bereth, His covenant. He has vouched for it, and He desires it. By saying that He's going to stand up and establish the covenant, stand up for and establish the covenant, He is announcing the central plank of the Mikre, of these invitations to meet with God. The covenant is internal. It was, it is, it will always be. There is therefore no old covenant, no Old Testament, no new covenant, no New Testament. Just the Torah and its one and only covenant. A familiar relationship to make life abundant and everlasting. We'll be back in a moment. The Bereth covenant was established on behalf of God, meaning that it was created for His benefit, even though we are the primary beneficiaries. That means that Yahweh gains something from these family-oriented relationships. He gets loved. He enjoys companionship. He gets to share His creation. It's the reason we're here. Now, as we heard, it is also like, this family is also eternal. It has to be eternal. God's eternal. Can you imagine God saying, what I want to do is have a family that dies? I want to have a close personal relationship and share my world with individuals who are going to die? No. The covenant is eternal, as are those who benefit from it. Now, in this next statement, we're reminded that the promised land serves as a metaphor for eternal life with God in heaven. It has to, based upon the juxtaposition of these two statements. This is why this gift is listed. This gift of the land is listed as one of the benefits of the covenant. It's God telling us we get to live with Him. That's why the destination amongst the seven Mikre, these invitations to meet with God, is Sukkah shelters, which means to camp out with God. We get to camp out with Him in the promised land. He says, and I will give to you and to your offspring after you this land where you are living as a stranger, as an alien. The entire land of Canaan, to eternally possess, and I will exist unto them as their God. Now, God makes it clear that the earth is not going to exist forever. We know that from science. We know that from God's own testimony. God says that, you know, the heavens and the earth as we know them are not going to exist forever. And he also tells us that those who participate in the covenant will get to see him and witness this time, make a new universe. And so it's impossible to possess the land eternally under that scenario. Therefore, it's important that we recognize that the reference to the Eretz, this realm, is a reference to living in God's home. This is where he chose to live, to exist when he walked this earth. It's where he will choose to return and to call his home when he returns to earth. This is his home on earth, and it's representative of that. In a sense, as I say, both Yahweh and science reveal that the earth will not last olam forever. The only way that this promise can be fulfilled is for the Eretz to represent the universe, inclusive of the realm known as Shamayim, the heavens. Therefore, the Eretz represents the conditions experienced in the Garden of Eden, those which will be experienced during the 1,000-year celebration of Sukkah shelters that is less than 20 years on our horizon. It just speaks of living with God and camping out with him. You know, just because God's going to return to earth and going to camp out with us for 1,000 years, beginning in 2033, does not mean that after the 1,000 years we all go our separate ways. No, we just get to see him create a new universe and get to continue to camp out with him and explore the new universe. Along these lines, the reason Abraham was currently presented as a Magor, which means stranger, in this realm was because he had not yet demonstrated to Yahweh that he was willing to completely trust in the covenant's precision. He said so, but this was something that was important. God wanted some tangible evidence that we would be able to witness genuine trust and reliance. And for that to occur, and it wouldn't occur for another decade, Yahweh would eventually ask him to walk to Mount Moriah as a dress rehearsal for his ultimate fulfillment of Passover. Now, one would have to search the word long and hard to find a more important statement than what follows. And God said as follows. And God Almighty, Elohim, said to Abraham, which means loving, merciful, and enriching Father, and as for you, you should actually and continuously observe my family-oriented covenant relationship, you and your descendants after you, throughout their generations, dwelling places, and eras of time. That advice was for us as well, and we will consider it when we return. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. I'm your host, Yada. You can engage in this program by calling 877-300-7645. So here is Yahweh. He has told Abram that he has given him, establishing this covenant relationship that he himself he said, you know, I'm going to take the stand to establish this covenant. It's going to be an eternal covenant, and it's going to be for you to be able to know who I am, understand who I am, know and understand what I'm offering, so that we can engage in a relationship for all time. And after saying that, he tells Abraham that his advice to him would be for him to actually and continuously observe his family-oriented covenant relationship, and that this would be advice for him and for his offspring, for his descendants, throughout their generations, dwelling places, and eras of time. So put the two things together. Well, God is saying that he personally is going to take a stand to establish the covenant. And then he says, if you want to understand this, then the way for you to do so is to closely examine and carefully consider the covenant relationship. Now, if you're going to closely examine the covenant relationship, what are you going to notice? You're going to notice what Yahweh asked of Abraham. You're going to notice what Abraham, how he responded. You're going to notice what God promised regarding this covenant. Excuse me. And you're going to put it all together. And when you do so, you're going to be in a position whereby you'll be able to understand exactly who God is, know who he is, understand what he's offering. And so he said, you know, if you want to be in a position to know how I'm going to take this stand, how I'm going to establish this covenant, then examine it. Think about it. You know, look at the terms and conditions of this covenant. You know, the first thing I did is I asked you to walk away from Babylon, from your country, from the place of that I assail throughout my testimony as being religious and political corruption. I asked you to walk away from that. Well, that means that God doesn't like those things. If you closely examine what he said about his covenant, which is the first thing is walk away from your country, walk away from your societal customs, walk away from your earthly family so to partake in my family. If you look at that, you'll come to know a lot about this family that God is offering. That in God's family, there will be no religion. There'll be no politics. There'll be no militarism. There'll be no patriotism. Nor patriots. Nor politicians. Nor religious individuals. So he's telling us, the best advice I can give you is for you to closely examine and carefully consider the covenant. Well, the first of those instructions was to walk away from Babylon. What's the second? To trust and rely upon Yahweh. Well, how does one trust somebody unless they come to know them first? And don't you come to know Yahweh by focusing on his covenant? Don't you come to see him as Father as opposed to Lord? Don't you come to see him as a God who is desirous of getting down on his knees to lift up his children, as opposed to a God who wants us on his knees? If you pay attention to the covenant, don't you come to see God as he really is? Don't you see him as not only someone who will talk the talk, but will actually walk the walk? Don't you come to see him as the one who engaged personally for the benefit of his covenant? Don't you come to see salvation as a byproduct of the covenant under these circumstances? Aren't you beginning to see why God says, I want you to focus on this? And then, of course, God's third statement as it relates to the conditions of the covenant was to walk to him and become perfect. Well, if you closely examine that, if you carefully consider that, you recognize that God has only provided one path by which we could walk to him. Only one day on that path do we become perfect. And all of a sudden you recognize that the importance of these mikra, these invitations to meet with God relative to our perfection and our ongoing relationship. You come to see, oh, wait a minute. If I put this one path that God has provided to him in context with God saying, I am going to take a stand and personally establish my covenant, then you can see how the two things are related. These invitations to meet with God, this doorway to his home of Passover, this means to perfect us on matzah, removing the fungus of sin from our natures. This adoption process on Bukurim, where now immortal and perfect, we're invited into God's home as his children, leading to Yahweh fulfilling and enabling the promises of Shavua, where we are enriched and empowered. All fits together. If we closely examine the terms and conditions of the covenant, we come to know who God is and understand what he's offering. We understand God's role as the Father of this covenant. Which is why one of the terms and conditions of the covenant is exactly what we just read right here. Be observant. closely examine, carefully consider Yahweh's family-oriented covenant relationship. Now we'll ask you, where can one do that? In all of the universe, where can you go? What can you look at? What can you consider? What can you examine that will enable you to observe the covenant? Where is it presented? Well, that would be the Torah. Where is it introduced? Well, that would be the Torah. Where is it explained? Oh, that would be the Torah. Where is it lived out in the life of humanity? That would be the Torah. Where is it affirmed? The Torah. Where is it explained? The Torah. And so, since the only place that the covenant is introduced, explained, enabled, is in the Torah, how is it that we can have a relationship with God and not be Torah observant? You can't. When God told Abraham, and as for you, you should actually be continuously observant, doesn't mean to keep, doesn't mean to obey. It means to carefully consider, to closely examine, to focus on, to pay attention to the details so that you gain understanding, to keep your eyes open, focused. Now, this happened to be scribed in the call sim, which means that we're not talking about hypotheticals here. God's saying, genuinely examine, literally focus on his covenant. You know, this is not a nebulous thing. God's gone to great lengths to explain it. And if you focus on just the word Bereth, think of what you come to understand. The first letter depicts family and home. The letter was drawn in the form of the floor plan of a home, one with a single doorway. Passover. That's the first thing you see, is the floor plan of a home, a family. That's what the first letter means. Be'eth. In fact, the name of the first letter is the Hebrew word for family and for home. You look at the covenant again, you closely examine, you carefully consider it. What's the second letter? It's a Rosh. How is it depicted? As a person's head. You have ears that hear. You have eyes that see. You have a mind that processes what you've observed, what you've listened to, so that you can consider it. And then a mouth to share your conclusion, your response to what God is offering. The Rosh is also the Hebrew word for first, for best. So this is not just any family, any home. It's the first family. It's the best home. You continue to look at the letters. The next letter is a Yod, which was originally called a Yod. It's a picture of a hand, but it's more than just a hand. It's the upper arm reaching down, the forearm reaching out, an open hand. God is our Father, reaching down and out to lift us up. That's the third word. So it's God's not only invitation that he's giving us with his hand, but also his strength, his ability, his capacity as God, and his role as Father, lifting up the children of the first family, empowering them, guiding them, exploring the universe with them, camping out with them, walking side by side with them. And the last letter, Tet, was drawn as the form of an X, often with a circle around it, but the X signed the letter. It says, you can rely on this. This is my statement. I am offering this under my credibility. You need to know this is coming from me. I will attest to this. I will vouch for this. This family relationship. This first family that I myself am reaching down and out to lift up. That's what he says I want you to focus on. And where would you read that? Well, same book, the Torah. So, this is impossible apart from the Torah. And the moment you begin to look at the conditions of the covenant, you come to understand what heaven's going to be like. But then, why not also consider the benefits of the covenant to get a glimpse as to what God has in store for us? What does he tell us? That he's going to make us immortal? That he's going to perfect us? That he's going to adopt us into his family? That he's going to enrich us and empower us? Powerful. Even the last of the seven or the five conditions of the covenant is telling. It's if you're as parents of children, God asks us as parents of children to circumcise our sons, to do so so that we remember to raise them, to teach them, to guide them, so that they too choose to participate in the covenant. It's the single most important thing we can do as parents. And he wants us to recognize that we are set apart from this world and unto God's home. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to the final segment of Shatteringness for today. I shared with you that shamar, which is the Hebrew word for observe, which means to carefully, closely examine, carefully consider, focus on. Shamar was written in the call stem, which tells us that this advice from God should be interpreted literally, that he really wants us to use our eyes to read what he has provided for us regarding this family-oriented covenant relationship, which means use our eyes to read the Torah and our brains to consider what he is offering and how we can respond to it. But it was also scribed in the imperfect. It's interesting that by the imperfect, what God is saying, make this habitual. Make this part of your ongoing nature. Do this regularly. Continue to do this. It's interesting that when God scribed the seven instructions on the second of the two tablets, you know, the one that typically are translated, remember the Sabbath, which everybody, of course, forgets, and the next one is just truncated to honor your father and mother, and the next one, you know, talking about you shall not kill, and the like. And what most people don't want you to know is the instruction on not killing. It was also written in the imperfect. Now, it was negated in the imperfect, which means don't make a practice of killing. Bearing false witness. Don't make a practice of bearing false witness. Don't make a practice of stealing. Don't make a habit of it. Don't, as part of your ongoing nature, ignore the seventh day. Now, here, God is saying the opposite in that make it part of your ordinary practice. Make it part of something you do on an ongoing basis to be observant, shamar. And if you are continually observant, if you're make a point to focus on what God is saying about his covenant, what he has revealed about his covenant, what he is offering in his covenant, what he's expecting from us if we wish to participate in his covenant, then you're in a position to capitalize on it and know who he is and receive all of its benefits. But it needs to be ingrained as part of our lives. That, you know, it's the constantly I'm asked by people, can you just make a real short version of Introduction to God or yada yada? And you know, just tell me what I need to do to be saved. And I said, why? God didn't. You know, if all you want to know is what do I got to do and I'm going to be saved and just go through that little ritual performance, then you're not going to know who God is. You're not going to understand what he's offering. You'll have no clue as what eternity is going to be like. God's not going to know you either. It'd be meaningless. What a waste of time. You know, heaven is for those individuals who really love this process of discovery, who think that learning is fun, who find satisfaction in transitioning from not knowing to knowing, and then from knowing to understanding, and then from understanding to acting upon it, to benefiting from that understanding. That's a process. If you love it, you're going to love heaven. You're going to love God. If you don't, you're not. And so there is no four spiritual laws except these four things, and through faith and complete ignorance, believe things that are not true and everything will be just fine. That's not the way that God operates. It's not how he wants to spend the eternity. And so it is a continual process. You know, I said that I'm so excited that questioningpaul.com is now available, and it's got the new version. But one of the reasons is that I made the practice of coming to know who Yahweh is and what he was offering and what he revealed to us part of the fabric of my life. I continued to learn. And as I continued to learn, I was in a position where I wanted to go back to what I had originally written and augment it, improve it, enhance it. Share so many of those things that I'd come to learn and understand through this process of being continually shamar, observant. It's the joy of life, my friends. The purpose of this program, I want to encourage you to keep your eyes open, keep your mind open, to prioritize learning, to prioritize understanding, so that you can enjoy this relationship with God. And that brings us to the end of our program today. We will resume in all three areas, talking about the news, talking about the myths of Christianity, talking about the kind of covenant relationship that Yahweh is offering when we join together at this same time tomorrow. And between now and then, may Yah bless and enjoy, for those of you who are interested in doing so, visiting and reading the new and improved Questioning Paul.